What is up, everybody? Hope you're all having a great day, great week, great weekend, whenever y'all are tuning in. You are tuned in to RBLR Bulls. My name is Carter Brantley, one of the co-hosts of this show. Thank you all for stopping by. Hope you're ready to talk some USF athletics because it was an eventful week. I know I say that every time, but this was a particularly eventful one. All the conference championships with the men's and the women's basketball teams are starting up. The men's team are cooking. The women's team also had a very good week. So it's a lot to talk about, but I can't go any further without introducing my wonderful co-host, Mr. Musab Tariq. How are you today, my man?
So far, so good. Like the famous saying, you know, this is March or whatever it is, you know, for March Madness and all that. March has arrived. I'm just, you know, excited for some, you know, USF basketball on both ends. So excited to see how good both of our teams are. Yeah, man. But there's more than just basketball, though. You know, we got a whole lot of other USF teams who are cooking. So, yeah, man. What a time to be a USF Bull.
Yeah, man. It's a heck of a time, man. Yeah, I mean, there's a really, really, a really good feeling around the USF athletics department right now for good reason. That there's just so much good vibes, so many good feelings because. Really, there's not a team that you can point to that you can say, oh, well, they're struggling, like they're not going to have a good year. Like, no, pretty much all of them are at least in a position to at the very least be competitive, if not be at the top or near the top of their respective conferences. So it's really exciting, man. Yeah, I'm excited to get into it. And we'll start off with the men's basketball team because, you know, they're about to start conference play and they won their conference. They won the full outright. You know, no shares or anything. I know that the share was sort of part of the original win last weekend against Tulane, but they took a W against Memphis and that clinched the entire AAC, you know, no sharing to be done. And they took down Memphis 96-89. It was a little bit closer than you probably expect because Memphis has had a pretty rough year, but they were playing in Memphis. So, you know, a game on the road against a team with as much talent, even if those talented players haven't necessarily played up to their ceiling, still really, really nice win to sort of add to their docket another road victory, another road conference victory. And it was program history, too. It was win number 750 all time. And they've been around since 1971. I was kind of surprised to read that because, frankly, I still think of USF as being sort of a young university athletically. But, you know, obviously the basketball program started way before the football program. So I'm thinking more in terms of football. But, yeah, it's their program record ninth win with the away jerseys on, you know, when they're on the road. That brought them to 22-8. It secured the number one seed for the tournament before the game even ended, frankly. But, you know, it was nice to get that victory. So who are some individual performances that you thought really stood out from this game? Because I know Wes Ennis was great. Was there anyone else that put on a clinic, shall you say?
Yeah, dude. Wes Ennis balled out, 29 points, 9 for 9 on the free throws. Joshua Majafo. He stepped up to the plate with 21 points, 7 for 9 for shooting, 3 for 4 from three, and just all around just effort. And I do wanted to, you know, give him a special shout out just because our star player Isaiah Nelson didn't have his best game, and it happens. But you know, I feel like it's always three people who always, you know, are the stars of the game. So it's You know, you think from your head, you know, it's, you know, Pinion and Ennis with the shooting, and then you have Isaiah Nelson just doing it all. And then usually, you know, you got CJ Brown, you know, splashing and, you know, some assists or some points.
Running the offense.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's a floor general. But in this case, it was Joshua Majafo. I mean, he's always been a great role player and all that, but I mean, this was his game. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So Joshua Majafo, yeah, 21 points. But just all around, real good stuff, just from the whole team. They put up a good fight. At times, it did get close. But, you know, I do want to highlight something special about this team is just how, you know, fast-paced our offense is. And, you know, regardless of, you know, whether we were only up by 1 point or by 10 points, I mean, you know, we kept up that tempo the whole time. You know, we didn't slow things down. We didn't hesitate. So that was real nice to see.
Yeah, man. I mean, Omajafo is sometimes the forgotten man, quote unquote, because he is, you know, sort of the role player, the glue guy. He's a very good slasher. He gets to the free throw line at a high rate in terms of his usage. Like, I know that, you know, he doesn't put up the raw numbers necessarily that guys like Pinion and Ennis and CJ Brown and Isaiah Nelson do. But, yeah, it was really tremendous to see him, especially shoot it so well from deep, because you think of him as more of, like I said, getting to the bucket. But the ability to stretch the floor, in addition to Ennis and Pinion doing that normally, which they do at such an elite level. I mean, they both got 95 plus threes, each of them individually, which is just absolutely insane. And so it was really great to see that kind of performance from him. Some more historic stuff. They have record 15 games of 90 plus points, top four all time in the state of Florida's history. You know, they've put up over 2,600 total points this season. Their mark is second most in the history of the program. So really cool stuff from that win against Memphis, and a lot of really excellent performances across the board. And then, of course, their finale, the senior night, it was kind of the victory lap, and boy, howdy, was it a victory lap. They demolished Charlotte. It wasn't even close. 83-60, a 23-point margin of victory. And I know, you know, going into the game, they already had the AAC locked up. You know, they didn't really need to win this game, but, you know, let's say the impossible happened, or not the impossible, but let's say disaster strikes, they don't win this AAC championship tournament, which, by the way, they're in the semifinals. We'll get into the specifics in a little bit later, but they're the one seed, so they only have to win two games. But let's say they were to lose in the semifinals. Losing to Charlotte would have made it pretty much impossible for them to get in as an at-large bid. And frankly, losing in the semifinals might make it impossible anyways. But if they make it to the finals and they lose that one in a close affair, this Charlotte win, a lack of a Charlotte loss at least makes it a dream. You know, at least it puts it in the realm of reality. Whereas if they would have lost this game to Charlotte, man, you got to win that tournament. Otherwise, you're not making it to the big dance. So it was a really nice win, really important win, despite the fact that there might not have on the surface been much at stake. So it was really fun. It brought their overall record to 23-8. And it was their 15th conference win, second most in the history of the program. This was Joseph Pinion's night or day. I guess it was an afternoon game that he went off for 22 points, five triples. Lead the scoring on senior day. Wes Ennis also had 20 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. That's really impressive. And Ennis and Pinion both managed to hit that 100 mark, the triple digits for three-pointers made. And they're just the 12th team in NCAA history with two 100 triple shooters, like 100 threes made for each of them. So really impressive stuff. Were there any other kind of tidbits or storylines from this game, Mr. Tariq, that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, shout out to the defense. And Carter, like you said, you know, you don't have to win this game, but you don't want to lose on senior day.
Right.
And I also wanted to give a shout out to our USF men's team for ruining Memphis's senior night.
That's right.
So, yeah, you know, it's tough. But anyways, this USF team is special, and, you know, they're not slowing down at all, even against a team like Charlotte. I mean, they're firing on all cylinders. The defense was a brick wall, holding Charlotte to zero fast break points and only 29 points in the first half. So from the jump, you know, they got the Charlotte boys, you know, to a slow start. As you know, we've been saying, we said it from the in the beginning of the episode as well, Carter. We're just seeing history, you know, day by day, minute by minute, you know, bullet by bullet. You know what I'm saying? And this was a season high crowd of 6,700 fans, you know, who were in attendance for that last game. So
heck yeah.
There's something special in that USF air, man. Something special in that Temple Terrace air is what I should really say.
That's right. So, hey, the Yingling Center, man.
The Yingling Center, just the culture. So yeah. Obviously it helps when your team is really good. And
of course,
I want to give a shout out as well to the social media team for all these athletic programs, dude.
That's right.
I just love to see what the kind of posts they have, especially the breaking news, y'all mad.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. They've got a lot of really cool stuff. I mean, we saw it with the football games. You know, they were doing all the really creative stuff.
Yeah.
With the cameras.
No one else did. Yeah. That got national recognition.
Yes, it did. And rightfully so. That was getting really creative. Yeah, man, their social team is on one. You know, they're on it. You know, they put in some good work. They do some really creative stuff because, you know, you have to, like, USF, obviously they're not Florida, they're not Miami, they're not FSU, but they're still in the state of Florida, and there's a lot of USF grads out there. So, you know, there's still some folks that want to see USF succeed, but you also have to package it in a fun way, because then it just makes it a little bit more enjoyable for everyone involved. So yeah, man, I'm with you. I was really excited to see all that. But even more exciting, there were some awards too. It's, you know, they give out all the conference awards. So Musab, give me something on how did USF do? Cause like they were the best team in the conference. So they had to have quite a few hardware to add to the trophy case, right?
Yeah. They were the best team in the conference and they had the best player in the conference.
That's right.
And you know who else they had? They had the best defensive player of the conference. You know, yeah. Who else they had? They had the newcomer player of the year of the conference. And the best part, or the most special part, is that this was awarded. These three awards were awarded to one man. That was who else but Isaiah Nelson. Mm-hmm. He is the first, AAC player to ever sweep player of the year, defensive player of the year, and the newcomer of the year. I also have to ask you, Carter, I don't know, how new is this newcomer of the year award? I don't think it's...
That's a good question, man, because I feel like with the way that college sports are now...
Could be its first year.
Yeah, like it's pretty much going to be like the newcomer of the year and the player of the year could very much be like intertwined moving forward for every conference, but especially for the American, because you could see
the transfers and all that.
So every year you're going to have a guy that maybe comes in from a bigger program that wasn't getting burned or whatever the case may be. And so he comes in and dominates the American conference, and then he wins newcomer of the year and player of the year. I feel like this is going to be a good bit more common moving forward. But it's really cool that Isaiah Nelson was the first to win all three of those awards. That's outstanding stuff. It is a good question though, because like newcomer of the year, like, you know, it has to be a recent thing
but defensive player of the year as well. That just tells you this guy can do it all on offense and he can play defense, man. You know, makes an NBA scout drool when you see a star player on offense be able to play defense as well.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I really hope he gets at least like, you know, a two-way deal, something like that, because, man, it'd be really cool for USF to have another, because I think they have Youngblood right now in OKC. I think he's on a two-way deal. And, man, it'd be cool to have some USF representation in basketball, because, you know, they've had a little bit in football and it's been fun, you know, with Jason Pierre-Paul and with George Selby played a little bit. Marlon Mack, obviously, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, you know, even the tight end Mitchell Wilcox, he was playing for the Bengals for a while. So it'd be fun to see them get another NBA player, because I think like Dominique Jones back in the day was sort of the NBA USF guy from my childhood. And he has a ring, technically. He won it with the Dallas Mavericks, even though I don't think he actually played. But, hey, a ring's a ring. You know, that's more rings than, I don't know, if it's fill in the blank with some super – more rings than Anthony Edwards has. I don't know. I'm just spitting out. Devin Booker, you know, NBA superstars don't have rings, but Dominique Jones does, so that's all that matters. But regardless, yeah, really historic stuff from Isaiah Nelson, really impressive. And Coach Brian Hodgson, he won AAC Coach of the Year. He's also a newcomer. Like he could have won the newcomer Coach of the Year, if you will. But there were also some all-conference team picks. Mr. Tariq, who were some of those – who were some of the guys that made the there were some newcomer all conference teams too, right? Like all newcomer.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. A whole lot of newcomer awards everywhere, man. But Isaiah Nelson was the only unanimous, you know, first team all conference pick, and also landed a spot on that all newcomer squad. And then Wes Enos joined Isaiah Nelson on that first team, AAC. This is the second time two Bulls have hit the first team in the same year. So that was, again, another historic milestone for USF athletics or USF men's basketball. But yeah, Joseph Pinion, he got third team all conference and all newcomer honors, and just some other cool, things to know. USF broke the AAC record. Again, another historic milestone for the most 100-point games in a season with six.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah, they also shattered the previous school scoring record by averaging 88.4 points per game behind Brian Hodgson's, you know, fast-paced system. So just, yeah, man, just special, dude. Just, you know, everything about USF, everything about this basketball team, it's, and then Isaiah Nelson, it just makes you want to say, when it comes to comparing them, you know, with the big dogs, it just makes you want to say, you know, give this team a chance, give that kid a chance. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I get it. All right. I get it. You know, he's not AJ Diabonsa, however you pronounce his name, you know, from BYU, or I get it. You know, he's not on, you know, the UConn or Gonzaga roster, but you know, give this kid a chance, give this team a chance. So,
yeah,
we have, hey, look, we have a chance, dude. Look, we win the AAC. There it is. You know,
yeah,
we have a chance. So,
and that, and speaking of, that's what's next for the Bulls. Sunday, March 14th is when they play the semifinals. The tournament's actually already started. I believe Memphis and Tulane are playing currently. So, you know, there's still some basketball to be played even before the big tournament begins. And, you know, luckily USF secured a bunch of buys because they were the best team in the American Conference in the regular season. So rightfully so, they get that little pass, and they only have to win two games. You know, the hope is obviously that they can make it through and just not even have to worry about an at-large bid, because man, that would really make you sweat. And it would just be really kind of a sick feeling in your stomach, because man, it's just, they've just had such a phenomenal season. So obviously you want them to win this conference tournament, but even if not, this is still such a tremendous start, to hopefully a long career for Coach Hodgson, at USF. What are your thoughts on the AAC championship and Brian Hodgson?
My only thought is the only, team that can beat this USF team is USF.
That's
but
right.
Also, my only fear, if it is a factor, it can be a factor, is the whole kind of, you know, maybe they have too much rest time. You know what I'm saying?
That's,
you know, maybe they,
yeah,
come out kind of cold, but I doubt it. I mean, you know, you just gotta kick these boys into shape while they're not playing a game.
Yeah,
you know, you got to keep these boys locked in. I'm sure they are, and you know, I know Coach Hodgson is a no nonsense kind of guy. He's really locked in. And, you know,
yeah.
He loves his players, like, straight up he does. As we were talking about before the show, you know, he made that kind of a statement that, you know, if anyone tries to reach out to my guys before this season ends, you know, I'm going to find them, or I forgot exactly what he said, but
right. It was
well, he was like, he's going to confront them. There was going to be some confrontation.
Yeah.
You know,
you love to hear that from your head coach, 'cause it's just, it's kind of fun. It's silly. It's nonsense. But at the same time, like, hey, like, because that's where we're at with college sports, right? You know, it's kind of a Wild West type of atmosphere, and yeah, you gotta be kind of protective of your players.
Oh yeah, man. You know, if Isaiah Nelson or Wes Enos were like juniors, I think Wes Enos is maybe.
I think Enos has one more year.
Yeah,
at least.
So
yeah, Enos
oh,
has
yeah,
more.
Man, you know, there's some scouts lurking.
For sure.
Scouts lurking around Temple Terrace.
Well, shoot, man. I saw. I mean, We talked about it last week, about the scouts showing up to, I forget which game.
Yeah.
It was the game, the Tulane game where they clinched.
Yeah. A couple of them came out.
Yeah. I think it was the Lakers. Yeah. I think the Magic had a person come out. They at least had like the little cards, like where they had it marked off in the press seating area. And I forget which teams exactly had people actually show up, but yeah, man, there were some people out, you know, so. You know, it's kind of fun. And those conversations, obviously, I mean, Coach Hodgson would be the first to say, like, man, that's awesome. Like, please talk to my players.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Because you can't tell a guy not to go to the NBA. You know, that's the dream. You know, that's the big time. So, yeah, man, it's going to be interesting to see how not only the players interact with the transfer portal in the offseason, but also Syracuse just fired their head coach. Coach Hodgson is from that area. Syracuse, big-time program. There's a lot of rumors circulating. I'm sure a lot of Syracuse fans want him there, and rightfully so. He's done such a tremendous job at his previous two stops with Arkansas State and now USF. He's going to be a hot commodity. He's going to be a hot name in this next coaching cycle for men's basketball, but he seems to really like it here, you know, and there's a very, I mean, it's a heck of a thing to be able to build a program or continue to build a program, and it, I don't know, it's something to keep in mind. And like I said, he seems to really enjoy it here. There's beautiful weather, and you know, you get to be in Tampa. Like, there's worse places to live for sure. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, and we'll monitor that storyline as it moves forward, because that's going to be something to talk about in the off season, but we're not in the off season. You know, they still got the AAC tournament. They still got potentially March Madness or whatever end of the season tournament they make it into. Hopefully it is March Madness, but regardless, we'll be monitoring all that stuff, of course. But, want to move on to the women's basketball team, because, hey, they deserve to get talked about quite a bit too, because they had a program milestone W after their win against Tulane, just kind of grinded out a 58-49 victory. It was their 800th all-time program win, and their 13th 20-win season ever. They've hit that mark 12 times in the last 20 years. So it was really fun. This was a really fun game, even though it was kind of a grit and grind Memphis Grizzlies mid to early 2010s type of game. But it was fun, man. There were a lot of really good performances. Who were some of the folks that was it kind of the usual crowd? Katie Davidson and Leo Maputo. Who else stood out for you, Mr. Tariq?
Yeah, man. Carla Brito also racked up a double-double. Just defense all around was just locking it up on Tulane. You know, Tulane only shot 28% from the field goal for the entire night. Just all-around efforts from everyone. You know, Eden Battle, Stephanie Ingram, you know, also contributing. So it was a big win, just what you need. And, yeah, I mean, the big thing that I like to see was just the offensive rebounds. We racked up 19. This was the highest total in AAC play. So, and just executing, you know, even at the end of the half, 17-3 run. To shut out the Green Wave. So, again, you know, we know where we stand. I think even if we lost this game, I think it wouldn't have changed our ranking. I think we would still be at number 3.
Right.
But so it just makes you think, you know, we're not kind of slowing down. You know, we're still firing on all cylinders. And,
yeah,
you know, maybe you're also thinking, you know, if you're one of the players, hey, it's, you know, game 800, or we have the chance to win our 800th game. So
yeah, be, you know, part of history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So big game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, closing on a 17-3 run, that's kind of nutty. Like, that's kind of insane. So really cool stuff there. And yeah, like you said, I think they were locked into that number 3 spot, but the good news for them is they only have to win one more game than the men's team. They start out in the quarterfinals Thursday against UTSA, who they've already beaten twice. So we'll see if they can beat them a third time, get the kind of the sweep, and then they'll kind of take it from there. It would be really cool if they managed to win this tournament. That would be really impressive. That would be a really, really cool storyline for this women's team, especially just with Jose Fernandez leaving, playing under an interim. I mean, there's some adversity there. You know, there was some tough things that you had to deal with your coach leaving and whatnot. But they fought through it. They still had a very good season. There is nothing to cry about, nothing to scoff at in terms of their production this year. And similarly to the men's team, they had some award winners too. Some team conference placements as well. What were some of the awards that you wanted to highlight, Mr. Tariq?
Absolutely. Yeah. Carlo Brito, second team all conference for the second straight year, just after a historic double double run. And then Eden Battle, she grabbed third team and also all newcomer honors. She was ranked 6th in the league with 15 points per game. And on top of that, Stephanie Ingram, she took third team honors, led the entire conference with 5.7 assists per game. And actually her 178 total assists this year is actually the fourth highest single season total in the history of this program. So just some real spectacular stuff. Yeah,
man. I mean, it's just really cool to see USF players get their due. You know, they have a great season. And the ladies had a phenomenal one, you know, even with the, like I said, even with the tumultuous changes and everything, they managed to just push through, take care of business. And I honestly don't think that number 3 is really too far off what most of the projections had them finishing at. So this is a really good year for them, and cool to see them get the recognition. So we'll see how they're able to do in the tournament. It starts tomorrow, March 12th, in case you're listening to this after. So it could be that it starts today for some folks if they're listening to this on Thursday. But yeah, regardless, it should be fun. Should be a fun tournament for sure. And we'll see if they can come out on top. But shifting our focus to the baseball team, because they had a heck of a weekend as well. They played Southern. They kicked that off with a 6-1 victory at home last Friday night. That's a Katy Perry song, I believe. So that's kind of fun. But they dominated game one of Saturday's doubleheader with a 15-1 blowout. And then they finished the sweep in game two of that with a 9-2 win. Michael Sané, he was locked in for that first half of the twin bill. He only gave up one run in five innings. He had an excellent outing. That's not quite a quality start. I think you have to pitch six innings for it to be a quality start, but still a nice outing for him for sure. And then they went to Jacksonville. They handled business with a high-scoring 11-6 road win. Who performed well in that Jacksonville game? I think Matt Rose had a little three-run home run in the first inning, right? Was there anyone else?
Yep, it was Matt Rose, Nathan Early as well, extended his reach base streak right? Yeah, yeah. 13 straight games. And then Jorge De Cardenas, he earned his second win of the year after throwing nearly four innings of effective relief. So, yeah, man. We're now a perfect 7-0 this season in games where we hit at least one home run. Very, very neat stat that I had come across. Crazy, you know, how these things are pulled. But, like I said, you know, or, you know, like we've said, and I know Jonathan has mentioned the PFF of, you know, college basketball. I should probably ask you. You may know. Is there like a PFF for college baseball?
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's countless. I know for Major League Baseball, like it's Statcast and FanGraphs and Baseball Savant and all that stuff. So I'm sure there's some kind of thing like that for college baseball. We'll have to look into that because that would actually be kind of cool, like tracking the exit velocities of the guys and you know, tracking the spin rate of the pitchers or their
they got like what's the RAS score in baseball?
That's actually a great question. So there's this thing in Major League Baseball called WAR, which is wins above replacement, which is sort of meant to be an all-encompassing stat that factors in your base running, your hitting, and your fielding. Or for pitchers, it's a little bit more straightforward. It's more just your straight run prevention and over a certain amount of innings where, you know, there's not necessarily like they'll call it a process WAR, which is basically like factoring in like your exit velocity, your contact rates, like how much you are able to make contact with the ball, your chase rates, which basically means like how often you chase pitches out of the strike zone, and trying to combine all of that into like one all-encompassing metric would sort of, I guess, be maybe the closest thing to a RAS for baseball, I guess, but they don't quite have that yet. At least not that I'm aware of. There's probably something out there for it, but yeah, man, that'd be fun. I love getting into the advanced analytics stuff with baseball, especially. If Zach thinks I'm obnoxious with football advanced analytics, it's kind of a whole different ball game with baseball, but yeah, it should be kind of fun. But the Bulls return home to host the first and only four-game series of the season. They're taking on Columbia, and game one is a couple days from now, Friday, March 13th. So that's something to keep in mind. And yeah, the baseball team, man, they're off to a really hot start. There's definitely one team to watch for in the American Conference because, once tournament time comes around for baseball as well, they're not quite in conference play yet, but that'll start as well. So it's going to be really fun. And softball, speaking of, actually already started their conference play. They kicked off their first series with a 9-4 win over Memphis on Friday afternoon. Kylie Strott, she sparked that comeback in the first game because they were down, but she managed to start it with a three-run home run. That was really, really fun. And then they absolutely trounced Memphis in their second game of that doubleheader Friday with a 12-3 blowout victory. It was really impressive. Alexa Galliani led the charge. She had a massive four RBI performance. And USF completed the weekend sweep Sunday morning, 5-2 victory over the Tigers. So that was really fun. Alex Wilkes, she had a two-run homer in the late stages to take the lead. Karis Pierce was a consistent threat. She had a hitting streak of four games over those games. So that was really fun. Ann Long, she was a great reliever. She came in to throw six scoreless to earn the win. They also didn't commit a single error. I know that's kind of sort of an arbitrary thing maybe, but you know, in college baseball and softball, errors are a little bit more prevalent than they are in Major League Baseball. So it's really impressive to see their defense be, you know, so stout. And with sweep, 20-8 overall, perfect 3-0 start to conference play. So that's kind of exciting. Where's the softball team headed next? Who are they taking on next, Mr. Tariq?
Yeah, well, Charlotte comes to us starting this Friday, March 13th. So yeah, man, should be a good one. Like we've seen just a lot of good stuff we've heard, you know, during the offseason about this softball program, Coach Erickson. So I'm just excited to see, you know, it's actually happening. I mean, 28-3-0 in the conference. Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, it's a great start, man. It should be a really exciting season for them too. Both baseball and softball are cooking, similar to men's and women's baseball. You know, they're both pretty evenly like solid. It should be a lot of fun. We'll see if the softball team can keep that hot conference play up, because that would be really fun. If they can manage to make some noise in the conference, and then once that tournament comes around, take care of business and maybe make some really interesting storylines to cover throughout this season. But the lacrosse team, they had a tough test at Corbett Stadium. They dropped a home matchup to Navy 19-8. What were some key takeaways from this loss? I know it's tough to take a loss like that, but there were still some nice performances. Who stood out for you, Mr. Tariq?
Yeah. You know, still there's some players that deserve their flowers. Caitlin Tartaglione and Ava Uphues, they led the offensive effort for the team, both racking up two goals apiece. Shout out Maggie Newton, you know, the primary facilitator for the attack game. She finished the afternoon with two assists. You know, they did battle hard in the draw circle all day, matching Navy 15-3. And then Elise Grissett, Julia Huxtable, Callie Cleary, and Kalina Johnson each added a goal to the stat sheet as well. So we did, show some life in the fourth quarter. We put up three goals for our highest scoring period of the game. Despite the loss, you know, our defense did remain active against a pretty high powered Navy offense. They took 37 shots at us. So
that's a lot.
Yeah, man. So look, conference play starts now. We're going to be, headed on over to Philadelphia to take on Temple this Saturday. So should be an exciting matchup. And now it's time for not that these games didn't matter, but now it's conference play now. So time to really lock in.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. I mean, conference play, it's kind of starting to kick the tires on some of the spring sports. You know, it's really coming around. We'll see how the lacrosse team can do. And it's still a young program. You know, they're
still young. Yeah. It's just nice to see. Look, it's just nice to see every single USF program getting that exposure. You know, sure. USF football, they got some exposure playing real, you know, good teams, UF and Miami this year. I mean, even Boise State, but UF and Miami, whether, you know, we won, lost, got demolished, it didn't matter. You know, just getting that exposure. Same thing with basketball for men's and women's. You know, we played Bama. I think we played another big team. We played
Oklahoma State.
Yeah, Oklahoma State for men's. And then for women's, yeah, I know we had a couple, man. UConn, South Carolina. UCLA. So, yeah, man. Same thing goes for, lacrosse, man. You know, we're hanging with the big dogs, and that's what matters right now, especially being it's only a second-year program.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's tough to really establish yourself as a program in that regard. We'll see how they continue their you said second year, right? This is their
yeah.
Second, yeah. So we'll see how they continue. Only their second year, man. Like that's kind of fun. So should be a lot of fun to watch them go to work and see how they do. But moving on to the beach volleyball team, they had the Tampa Beach Brawl this past weekend, and they had a perfect weekend, 4-0. They had a statement victory over crosstown rival UT, 4-1. And then they had a clean 5-0 sweep against Barry University. And then Saturday morning started strong. USF took down Palm Beach Atlantic 4-1. And then they had to face Eckerd, and Eckerd was a bit of a tougher one. They took home a 3-2 victory over Eckerd, and that moved their season record to 8-4. Who were the key performances from this match or from this weekend tournament? This is kind of fun, man. A Tampa Beach Brawl, you know, you don't.
Yeah, dude. I mean, yeah, NCAA beach volleyball now here in our backyard. A whole bunch of schools coming to our town. Hell yeah, mm-hmm. man. Yeah, shout out Kate Stewart and Teresa Lechikabova. Just both problems all weekend long for the opponents. They finished with a perfect 4-0 pair record. Julia Panko and Cornelia Crudu, they came through in the clutch versus Palm Beach Atlantic, winning that three-set thriller to seal the duel. And then pair three consists of Ryan, Janest, and Isabella Almeida. They secured the final win with a 19-17 third set nail-biter against Eckerd. So now, you know, our Bulls will be headed into the mid-March four-game winning streak, you know, momentum, and going up to Conway, South Carolina this weekend for the Coastal Carolina Invitational, going against teams like Morehead State, Coastal Carolina, Salem College, Tennessee Tech.
Hey, there we go. That should be a lot of fun. Yeah, it was just so cool to see like schools like Eckerd and UT kind of participate and you know, get some shine in the Tampa Beach Brawl. Like it was cool, man. I don't know. I know they're going to South Carolina this weekend for that Coastal Carolina Invitational, but I thought this was really cool for them to sweep. Obviously USF, a big time program. So, you know, kind of expect it, but at the same time, it's beach volleyball, you know, some crazy stuff can happen. So, it was cool to see, and it's cool to see the ladies show out for sure. So, yeah, man, we'll see how they can do, in Conway. Cause hey, Coastal Carolina, it should be a lot of fun. But now we'll move on to tennis, and, the men's tennis team, they fell just short. They had the war on I-4 matchup, but UCF is number 9, and they were at home. So USF fell just short 4-3. They were in front of a record crowd too. A lot of people showed out for this. Who are the key individual performances? Because I know there were like to have a performance like that against such a high ranked program. There must have been some folks showing out. So who are the guys that put forth a really strong performance this past weekend?
Yeah, man, it was a dogfight, Carter. Our team led by our best player Elijah Sham. He got that statement win on court 2 against the Knights with a dominant 6-3, 6-3 performance. Augustin Koehler, you know, he battled back in his match, won in a tiebreak 10-5 on court 5. And then we, you know, traveled on over to Stillwater and, you know, had a 4-1 loss to Oklahoma State, you know, did what we could. But the only point we were able to get was from Stefan Maruzek, which was pretty close. I mean, it was, again, another dogfight. So it was at that number 2 spot. So, yeah, man, you know, just both of these games, obviously that UCF one, just, you know, real unfortunate just because it's one of the few, you know, I-4 battles we have.
Right.
So, yeah, that one was tough. But, you know, there's always, you know, there's always many more games ahead. And we're going against some tough competition, man. Oklahoma State's, you know, 34th ranked in the nation right now. So, you know, we did what we could. And unfortunately, we had to handle another loss against Tulsa. Some conference play now. It was 4-2 loss. So, you know, we tried to do what we could, but I do feel like, you know, some guys deserve their flowers, like Tameo Gallard. You know, he got his first career collegiate single win, 6-3, then lost in the second set, 3-6, but then won 6-1. Augustin Koehler, you know, he racked up a win as well during that trip. And then for doubles, the duo of Hugo Carr and Tameo Gallard, you know, kind of working some new chemistry now. They've got a 7-5 win in Tulsa, so that was nice to see. So it's been a tough stretch for our men's tennis team, Carter. We've played several ranked opponents. So as of right now, we're standing at 3-11. Yeah, we're going to be hosting Middle Tennessee this Saturday. So fingers crossed we get the win. But it's – I'll be honest with you, man. You know, it's just – the college tennis, I really can't say, you know, how talent is, you know, worked out and all that, like recruiting and all that, because it's sure. It's really not like any other sport. You know what I'm saying? Right. You know, for college hockey, you know, you're probably getting the best kids either international or from, you know, New York or Minnesota. Or then, you know, South Florida is known for, you know, football talent. You know what I'm saying? Right, those kind of sure. things. But for tennis, first of all, we know, as I mentioned, is international. But, yeah, you can find good talent anywhere. But, yeah, absolutely. Just colleges pick and choose. So, hey, man, it's all good though, man.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how they're, if they're able to turn that, right the ship or turn it around or whatever cliche you want to use. But, yeah, it's tough. Luckily the women had a nice, little victory. They dominated number 57 Penn 6-1. It was really impressive. They got the double points early thanks to a 6-2 win from Drukarova and Falster, and a 6-1 beat down by Miglio and Senley. So that's really fun. Falster kept the energy high in singles as well. She had a 6-3, 6-3 win on court four that pushed the lead. And then Francesca Miglio, she stayed hot as well. Another straight set 6-3, 6-3 victory. So that put them up 3-0. And then Drukarova, she showed some real feistiness in a really tough three set thriller, like 6-2, 2-6, and then 7-5. It really came down to the wire there, and that clinched the team victory. But they still stayed locked in. Margarita Marcon did not; she was just refusing to go away. Really, she dropped the first set, but then battled back to win a 7-3 third set tiebreak. It was really impressive. And then Melissa Senley, she also capped off the excellent afternoon. She outlasted her opponent in a 10-7 match tiebreak on court one. So that moved them to 4-6 on the season, but it adds a really huge ranked win to their spring resume. It was really fun. They only dropped one singles point the entire day at the home courts, so that was really impressive. And they've got a three-match weekend here in Tampa. They're going to stay here at home and face VCU tonight, and then number 27 Yale and number 69 Liberty this weekend. So they've got a lot going on there with the women's team as well, having a little bit of a better year than the men's team. But you know, there's still some room for improvement on both sides. But that's bringing us towards the end of our episode. We really appreciate y'all for tuning in. Any closing thoughts on USF athletics, Mr. Tariq?
Oh, I was just going to say that I'm pretty sure maybe the tennis match is over. Actually, it is. Oh, okay. You know, yeah. So, hey, I got good news for y'all listeners. You know, to say thank you for, you know, tuning in with us, I am proud to announce that our University of South Florida women's tennis team won today 4-3 against Virginia Commonwealth University.
Hey, so, there you go.
What a way to finish off the episode.
Now they're 5-6.
With the buzzer beater win from our women's tennis team.
There you go. We'll break that down a little bit more next week. We're running out of time here, but really appreciate y'all for tuning in. Hit that like and subscribe button on the way out. We'd really appreciate it if you enjoyed what you heard. Shout out to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Musab Tariq. He made my job incredibly easy. He does so much work behind the scenes. Y'all have no idea. Really appreciate our producer as well, Mr. Rico Wheeler. He's putting in work as well. You might notice we're on a new platform, so we're having some fun with that. And by fun, I do not actually mean fun. But regardless, we'll see y'all next week, regardless of whatever platform we're on. We'll be talking about the USF Athletic Department because that's all we know. And until then, and as always,
go Bulls. Go Bulls.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.